With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
The overwhelming connotation of the word gentrification in some circles is, for the most part, you must agree, negative. But have we really looked at it from all angles as opposed to just accepting generalization and that gentrification only leads to disenfranchisement? A recent study conducted by the Federal Reserve Bank and NORC, an independent research agency at the University of Chicago, reveals data that beats back the drawback of neighborhood change. And joining us on the line to talk about this study is Arthur Sturkow, a local real estate analyst. Arthur, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Arthur, let's just start off with this. Is that a fair assessment? Most people think of this notion of gentrification, and immediately a negative connotation comes to mind.
I think most people, and I'll include myself in it, when you say the word gentrification, you think of the glasses half empty. What about these people that are being, you know, moved out of their neighborhoods, their best friend next door is moving out because the house is being renovated and they are being evicted? You know, you hear all these horror stories. Their church is no longer going to be the same that it once was. Their social connections are going to be disconnected. Those are all the social things that all of us have heard for the years, and they're not wrong. Those are accurate negatives to be associated with gentrification. But this is the first report I've ever seen based on statistical facts and not made-up facts by some biased group. This is census data. This is individuals' social security information, government data, tax data, income tax data on individuals who live in those areas that gentrified compared to those individuals in areas that did not gentrify but were similar in the same census characteristics. So it is a true A versus B comparison. And to see what happened to those people over a 14-year period compared to the area that didn't gentrify. And I'll be honest, the results were, frankly, very illuminating and added a whole different dimension to the concept of gentrification. I think that any city council person, zoning person, who's involved in anything regarding, changing zoning or development in an area, they need to read this report not once, not twice, but three times. It goes pretty deep. Some of the big takeaways, which I thought was the most important one to me, was the impact on children. It had a huge positive impact on kids because they had a decreased exposure to poverty. They also tracked these kids in these areas and found that those children and now remember, these are original residents we're talking about.
Correct.
The original residents, not the new people moving into these gentrified areas. They tracked the original residents who stayed in those areas. And their children in the gentrified areas were more likely to attend and finish college. The rents for the area remained basically the same as those in non-gentrifying areas for the lower-educated, lower-income individuals. So those are, frankly, facts, not the usual kind of, here's an example of someone who said, hey, I had to move because the rents went up. And that's true, but it may not reflect accurately. What about all the other people? That may be 1 out of 1,000, maybe 1 out of 3. Statistically, this report documents it.
What's interesting is when you think about some of the downstream implications of these oversimplifications or generalizations, one of the statements used by one of the reporters that was reporting on this report says that anxiety over gentrification is such a powerful force that it stopped Amazon in its tracks when the company tried to open a second headquarters in New York. And when you think about the opportunity loss for communities at large by not really peeling back the layers of the onion to look at exactly what you just outlined and looking at the empirical data in order to determine what really happens, you are creating an environment for failure in many respects. Your thoughts?
Well, I think you're exactly 100% on track. You know, 2 + 2 = 4 is a statistical fact. The fact that a neighbor may tell me 2 + 2 = 8, you know, that doesn't make that a statistical fact. So there are a lot of anecdotal stories which may be true, which may not be true, or may be exaggerated. But these are facts. These are strictly pure numbers, easily verifiable, and self-reported. One of the other interesting numbers, which kind of blew me away, frankly, was the effect on property values on the less educated homeowners who stayed. And their property values increased on average $15,000 more in those gentrified areas by staying there than homeowners in other areas that didn't gentrify. So there's a net $15,000 income for someone less educated. The more educated homeowner in the area, they saw their property values increase $20,000 more than would have been expected. So you can certainly say that the property values will probably go up. That's certainly going to be true. But to ignore the increase in the property value is just looking at one side of the equation.
What was interesting, too, is when you started to look, and this study looked at in-migration versus out-migration, and statistically, the numbers did not change very much when you looked at depressed neighborhoods that would be ripe for gentrification, that it just didn't change. The turnover rate was still you would expect it that it would have been appreciably disproportionate impact for the lower socioeconomic groups in that neighborhood, but that wasn't the case.
No, that's exactly true. What most people, I don't think, really realize is that the transient nature of many of these low-income census tracts, whether they're gentrifying or non-gentrifying, is extremely high, 69% typically. For renters and a little bit lower for homeowners, but that's a very high turnover in those. So the expected turnover rate in the gentrified area was basically only 6% more than what would have been over the non-gentrified areas. But you have to balance that off with where did they move to? Yeah, they turned over, they moved, but they moved into other, you know, areas that maybe didn't gentrify, and they're back in the same circle of blighted houses, poverty areas, and things like that that they came from. So I'm not sure that's a net benefit. Certainly, you know, the facts dictate that people who remain in gentrified areas economically, their exposure to poverty and effects of poverty are greatly reduced.
Arthur, when we come back, the report does reveal that there's still some negative impacts, some givens, the obvious. Let's talk about some of those. And I think the report says that there are ways to deal with those issues as well. When we return, Arthur Sturbkow, local real estate analyst, talking about gentrification and whether or not it is a sum total negative or not. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back and we're talking to Arthur Sturbkow, local real estate analyst, about a most recent report that was issued by the Federal Reserve Bank as well as NORC at the University of Chicago. And NORC is actually an independent research agency, been around since the 1940s, is utilized extensively by research universities as well as the media and others. And Arthur, you must admit NORC is a pretty reliable data source.
Oh, it's one of my go-to independent thinking organizations. It doesn't have a political agenda. It's just pure 2 + 2 = 4. Here are the statistical data, and it's very clear that this is what happened as a result of it. That there's not a lot of social Democratic, Republican, or any of that kind of thing. It's just a pure recitation of facts and results as a result of those facts. So it's as probably as good a database to use for decision making as we can secure. It's an excellent organization.
Yeah. One of the challenges, obviously, is increased property values that equates into increased property taxes. And, you know, so one might say that not all changes of relative to gentrification count as an improvement. And that can be difficult for homeowners to afford if they're facing rising tax bills, right?
Well, that is certainly true. But the impact of those increasing property tax bills are offset by an increase in amenities, better roads, better community centers in the area, more available shopping, more job opportunities, because more affluent or more educated or wealthier people are coming in. And it's disturbing, upsetting the percentage of poverty in the area. It's changing the reason to invest in that neighborhood. It's bringing in capital. So, yes, the property values are going up, but that's what's attracting capital and businesses and new jobs into those areas. So for everything, there's a negative. You're exactly correct. But there is a positive to offset it. Some of these folks, their average incomes have gone up as a result of living and working in those areas. So there are some corresponding negatives, but they're also offset by the positive. So you have to look at both sides of it. Again, glass empty can be half full, and it can also be half empty.
Is there not also the opportunity of just deciding to cash out? I mean, as the property values go up, you have the opportunity to cash out of the property if you happen to be an owner, move into another area and have more equity,
less debt,
and you know, you put yourself in a better position to succeed.
That is true. And this report, again, it shows that there's not any bias, because it also talks about the expenses of moving from point A to point B. Now, most of those expenses you would have had anyway, because you're more likely to move anyway. Whether you had the same expenses in a non-gentrifying area of moving as in a non-gentrifying area. So there are some moving expenses. And basically what the study shows, if you really dig down to it, it really shows that those 6% people basically moved about a year and a half earlier than they might normally have moved. So it gave a little bit more frequency to turnover. Not a lot, obviously, 6%. But still, it is significant to say that you're able to move from that house to another house and possibly upgrade, possibly find another area that's in the process of becoming gentrifying and, you know, enjoying that increase. So you may be moving from one escalator to another escalator, which is not a bad thing if it's all going up.
And interestingly, one of the conclusory statements was, perhaps most importantly, low-income neighborhoods that gentrify appear to improve along a number of dimensions known to be correlated with opportunity.
You know, you and I just hit on the exact same paragraph. That was number one on my list. It absolutely shows that, you know, gentrification, and the part that it was most impactful on me was, it reduces the exposure to poverty, which is tied especially to healthy outcomes for children, increases the probability of them completing school, attending college, and completing college. To me, it's all about the kids.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a very interesting study. I mean, it doesn't mean that it's an absolute, but it does present another side of the argument. Arthur Sturbkow, thank you so much for your thoughts. We really appreciate your time. Have a great weekend. And once again, thank you. All right. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. On a text line, directly from the report, this could provide new options for policies designed to increase children's exposure to high-opportunity neighborhoods, for example, by targeting subsidies to help them stay in neighborhoods. Good luck getting white people to help poor black people. Really? There are any number of subsidies that U.S. taxpayers provide every day. There are any number of policies. Housing, urban, and development policies, health, education, and welfare policies, Social Security policies, Medicare policies, Medicaid policies, day in and day out. Very short-sighted, always trying to weaponize race as it relates to any number of these issues. That's why I like going to the empirical data to see one way or another, look at both sides, positives, negatives, try to net it out, see where it all falls out to see what you really need to focus on instead of just looking at outcomes, the what. You need to look at the why. You need to focus on the why. You need to start with the why when you're crafting the policies. Because if you accept these overgeneralizations, and right away, the overwhelming connotation of the word gentrification, as we all know, is mostly negative. As Arthur Sterbkow put it, the glass half full, as opposed to trying to understand and embrace maybe there are some positives. And when we try to assess or evaluate or quantify the positives, in understanding them as well, so that we can develop meaningful policies when we're trying to figure out what we're going to do from a policy perspective. If we go in thinking that all we have to do is remediate negative outcomes and don't come to the realization that there's actually positive influences that are present as well, it leads to false and faulty outcomes because we've based this on a false premise. Hence, in my view, that's why a lot of governmental policies fail. We let one side or the other, and they're both guilty of it. This is not party neutral. This is not ideology neutral. They're both guilty of it. We let one prevailing thought, process, party, or otherwise prevail in crafting or developing the policy. Big mistake. You've heard me say this dozens of times. Anyone who scores better than 90% on any grading on a legislative body, you should look at those individuals through a jaded lens, because they're too much in their pocket. The world just doesn't work that way. It can't be that they're right 9.5, 9.6, 9.7, 8, 9% of the time. No. Impossible. All that means is that we've embraced an ideological bent, the generalization, and we're going to vote down the party line because we're more worried about, like Bobby Jindal was, the report card. We want to get straight A's instead of meaningful outcomes by these special interest groups that are issuing report cards that are completely and totally meaningless. It's only meaningful to them. To you, it has a whole different outcome and a whole different meaning. We want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. Love to hear what you're thinking about this issue. Is gentrification just simply a negative thing, or does it have some positive aspects? And is there a balance of interest that can be worked out? And when we are developing policy, and you're going to be voting on something in October, whether you realize it or not, that is a policy change, a constitutional amendment that's going to affect the city of New Orleans that's been put forth by the Cantrell administration. I am patiently waiting for the rules, for the protocols to see how this is going to be judged. The assessors also asked for an AG's opinion. We'll talk more about that when we come back. This is Newell on WWL. Hi, we're back. We've been talking about gentrification, a new report that's out by NORC at the University of Chicago in conjunction with the Federal Reserve Bank, and it reveals data that beats back some of the drawbacks of a neighborhood change. Let's go to Jimmy out in Gretna. What say you, Jimmy?
Hey, Newell, great show, man. I always listen. I rarely call. I had two quick questions, and I'm going to hang up.
All right.
And one request. I'm hoping you can get Walt Isaacson on your show. Yeah, I usually listen every day. He's the master planner for New Orleans. I think he'd have a lot of information on this. Since post-Katrina, the head of the Aspen Institute, LaToya Cantrell and Mitch Landrieu are Aspen Institute members, and they have a lot of influence on what's happening in the city. And my two questions are, that's my request, Newell. My two questions are, I'll try to make it quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're hearing in the news about Gert Town and predominantly African-American portion of New Orleans and the radiation underneath the housing there the last few weeks in the news. Correct me if I'm wrong here, the discovery of nuclear power and whatnot, radiation. How old is this neighborhood? And I just don't even see how it even adds up. I almost feel like the story is contrived to relocate these people and maybe create that stack and pack housing we're seeing downtown and in mid-city. That's question number one. Question number two, with your background in the police field and crime and data like that, we always heard cities like Detroit, Baltimore, New Orleans, you fill in the blank, you'd have these high crime rate levels, Chicago, for example, and excuse me, Detroit's a great example. We always heard in the news, Newell, that, 30, 40 years, Detroit's been a crime-ridden city. Middle-class whites and blacks left because they were scared. Is crime sometimes used as a way to relocate people out? Because I've seen that in New Orleans. You know, mid-city now is a thriving area, and my grandmother lived there 20 years ago, and it wasn't anywhere like what it is now. And it almost seemed like the police department let the crime get out of control intentionally to scare people out. And then these master planners come in and they buy up blocks and blocks dirt cheap, and they reconstruct the city the way they want. And I feel like Gert Town's another example of that coming up, where they're going to relocate these people under the clause of this is due to radiation in your health. But
well, first of all, Gert Town's not big enough to make an appreciable difference one way or another for a developer to make any significant amount of money. So, you know, I spent a lot of time in Gert Town when I worked in the Orleans Parish Criminal Sheriff's Office. I was there almost every day. So, I mean, it's just not that big. So this kind of this conspiracy theory that you're talking about, the police intentionally doing this or doing that, police are mostly reactionary. 99.9% of what they do is reactionary. So for them to participate in anything from a proactive standpoint has little or no chance, especially in underfunded cities like Detroit, Baltimore, Chicago, and other areas. It's just not going to happen. I don't buy into that at all. As a number of businesses moved outside the city, so did the population centers. And that's just the way that it's gone. You know, the radiation thing, I really don't know anything about that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.